Yeah, Tom, we really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're busy as can be, but taking the time to be with us. Thank you.
You got it, Coach. What's going on?
Let me jump right into a couple of things. Listen, I was with some friends of mine over the last few days, and told them you were coming on today. And they usually they're football fans, as you might expect, and they wanted they had a couple of questions they wanted me to ask you. So with that in mind, I am gonna ask you that. But first, I want to get your – I know you're more involved with the NFL, but I want to get your observation, your thoughts on the NIL and what's going on in college football and how this is going to impact the game and where it might go from here.
Well, I got a coach from a text from a head coach for a pretty big program a few days ago, and you know, just unprompted, he said, you know, NIL has really changed everything. You're talking about, you know, really changing the dynamics in terms of recruiting. You know, obviously the financial element, it just kind of changes how prospects may look at programs. It also certainly changes, you know, for NFL agents. You know, I've talked to agents in the past week who, you know, they're very much in touch with the fact that they're going to have to be recruiting instead of, you know, college juniors. They got to be recruiting college freshmen, if not incoming freshmen, you know, high school kids. You've already seen a bunch of the top agencies land, especially the quarterbacks for NIL and marketing deals. I think it remains to be seen how big the money could get. And we may not know that until, you know, September, October, when the next Joe Burrow, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield kind of bursts onto the scene and really takes over. You can imagine the money Trevor Lawrence would have been making through the course of his career. But you're talking about big business. And in a lot of ways, this was an inevitability because you're not talking about the schools directly paying the players. You're talking about boosters who normally, you know, contribute a lot of money to the school, as well as corporations that, you know, contribute things to the school in terms of licensing deals. And, you know, a lot of that money in the past has gone toward facilities. How much of that, you know, that dollar that colleges are used to getting actually now gets redirected to the players versus new money appearing and going to the players? Again, that remains to be seen, but no question, this changes a lot. Guys are still not going to be, especially first-round draft picks, are not going to be getting paid more money or as much money in college as they would be in the NFL. So I don't know that this has a huge impact in terms of guys who might have been on the fence, mid-round draft picks, deciding whether or not they come out or not. But certainly, it's a big change for college football, and I'm just personally interested to see the first time that, let's say, Adidas decides to try to strike a deal with the top player from Oregon, which is a noted Nike school, what happens? I mean, you want to talk about disruption. I think a lot of that will not happen in terms of the big corporations, because they know the moment that they mess with somebody else's business, now that company is going to mess with their business, and it becomes a trickle-down effect. But you absolutely are going to have certain competitive types of things, and college coaches, college programs who are used to having complete control over things. You know, you don't want to be the head coach right now who's got a social media ban or saying you can't do this stuff, because, you know, that's going to get down to prospects, and they're going to go, well, if I can, you know, have a presence and make money someplace else, why in the world would I go to that school?
You're exactly right. It's going to have this huge. I think it's huge. I have some real trepidation about it. When you put that together, the NIL, together with the transfer portal and the further involvement of gambling into the college game, Tom, it's going to be a different game. And if people think that agents and attorneys aren't going to get involved in this, they're wrong. they're just wrong. The inequities that are going to come out of it, the recruiting advantages are going to be huge. I don't think we've even tipped the iceberg yet on what the recruiting advantages could be with certain schools. And it's just, you know, this game, I maybe shouldn't say this, but the college game was never, ever intended to be a money-making venture. for college kids. It just was not. I mean, my goodness, with all they get the scholarship, room and board, anything they need in the way of materials. And then this is going to be, well, it's just, it was never intended to be this. I just truly believe that it's going to change the game. Let me jump to NFL, a couple of questions that was asked to put forward to you. One, of all the NFL teams considering free agency and the draft, the two primary ways to procure talent in the league, during this past season, now that those are done, which teams do you feel help themselves the most in free agency and the draft?
No, it's a great question, and a lot of that, as you know, Coach, will be kind of playing out here in the months to come. I think the one team that jumps out immediately is the Giants, you know, between, of course, getting Saquon Barkley back, you know, whether he's full go in week one or wherever that may take place. But the centerpiece of your offense returns, then you invest in free agency with Kenny Golladay, John Ross, who, of course, you know, very fast, talented guy, but never can stay healthy. You bring him in. You bring Kyle Rudolph in. You draft Kadarius Toney from Florida. Really, this is, they're trying to do everything possible to give Daniel Jones a chance to succeed, because this is kind of a tipping point year, as it is for a lot of quarterbacks in year three, you know, because you get to that certain point and this is either the guy or he's not. And you got to find out. And whatever qualms people have about Daniel Jones, I don't know that you look at who he was throwing to last year or who he had blocking for him and say that guy had the best possible chance to be successful. So that's one team that, you know, immediately jumps out. I think that a lot of the other teams, you know, are ones that I think you can look at and say they've potentially helped themselves into the future. You know, you look at what San Francisco did, setting themselves up with a guy in Trey Lance, who every coach, every GM, every scout that I talked to in the pre-draft process loved the guy. And by that, I mean the person. They believe in Trey Lance, the work ethic, the football IQ, the personality. He's got no clue what the guy can be because he played 17 games at a lower level of football where North Dakota State was so much more talented than everybody else on the field. The fact that they've now got a guy in Jimmy Garoppolo who knows that he's kind of playing for his career in 2021, then you start to develop a Trey Lance who, again, we don't know what he can be, but I remember one college scouting director telling me, you know, whatever the ceiling is, he'll make it. In other words, he's got the entire makeup that you like in him. And if you're the 49ers and you feel like you're on relatively stable ground with your ownership group in terms of, you know, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan have such a close relationship with Jed York. They were in the Super Bowl a couple years ago. They're the rare team that right now, just with all the injuries they had last year, they ended up with a higher draft pick, more capital to move up. They potentially got their quarterback of 2022 and beyond, and yet they're back now with much the same core and the same quarterback that they got to the Super Bowl with in 2019 before all the injuries. So they're playing for now, and they're playing for the future. Time will tell whether that was the right pick to take Trey Lance over Justin Fields and over Mac Jones, but just such a unique situation where you've got a coach and GM going into year five together. They've had three losing seasons in 4 years, but also made a Super Bowl. They've had a ton of high picks. They got a really talented roster. Now you got two quarterbacks there. I'm just fascinated to see how that entire situation plays out.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with those two. You know, one that stands out to me, Tom, and get your comments on it. Believe it or not, New England, contrary to Belichick's MO, he really went out and did the job, I think, in free agency. Gosh, they really plugged the holes. And then they ended up, in my opinion, my humble opinion, with the very best quarterback they could have ended up with in the draft. He fits the Belichick style perfectly, from the football IQ, the smarts. He's very accurate. I'm not comparing him exactly with Tom Brady, but he is he has many of the same qualities that Brady had when he came along as a young guy, and they did a heck of a job doing what he could do best, not asking him to do too much, and playing great defense and winning, which is the Belichick style. But anyway, I think New England and I think Tennessee has really helped themselves with Julio Jones going in there.
Yeah, I mean, those are two more great examples, Coach, because, you know, I think we almost lose track because this is just, this is the new NFL. People are doing unorthodox types of things. I mean, when you look at Tennessee, they every year have one or two big-time splash moves. This year, one comes late in the form of Julio Jones coming over, which, you know, that's going to be unique because there are so many things that Julio does that are similar to what A.J. Brown does, and you're not used to having a receiver in that offense who really doesn't block, you know, not to mention one doesn't really practice with Julio Jones, which are a couple of things that, you know, with his age, his injury history, he's obviously been pretty durable in terms of playing, but he's played hurt a lot and he hasn't practiced a lot. You know, that was certainly something that you know, people were thinking about as they were making different trade offers for him. But, you know, they've got, you know, no excuses. They've got a new offensive coordinator in Todd Downing, who's a well-respected guy who's been in the league. He's been with quarterbacks. He most recently coached the tight ends. So he's tied into the run game. And he takes over an offense with, you know, Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown, and now Julio Jones joining the mix. Not to mention on defense, they bring in Bud Dupree. They missed on their two, you know, kind of splash moves to go get edge rush last year with Vic Beasley and Jadeveon Clowney. Those guys combined for zero sacks, and they made like $20 million. You know, those are big misses, but they just went all in on Bud Dupree. Even coming off his ACL injury, they paid top dollar within this marketplace, which, of course, was affected by COVID, to bring him in. You know, that's a team that has been good. They've been in the playoffs. They're trying to take that next step, and John Robinson's not afraid to be bold. And then New England, I mean, yeah, I was remiss to leave them out. Just, you know, you almost forget because this offseason is you know, kind of felt endless here. I mean, they're more active than any team has ever been in terms of the money they were willing to spend, certainly more active than Bill Belichick has ever been. You know, the way they bring in multiple tight ends that they think can help out that offense, they bring in receivers. Their big question is going to be the quarterback position. And I would just tell you, you know, one coach who I trust on quarterback matters above probably everybody else in the league, and he did a ton of work on all the draftable quarterbacks this year, really liked Mac Jones, and I saw him a month or so ago, and he told me, unprompted, you know, I guarantee you when we get to week one, the starting quarterback in New England is Mac Jones. And it's for the reasons that you mentioned, Coach, which are, you know, not just the football IQ and the, you know, the intelligence, but also the processing ability, the fact that he can see it so quickly and he is accurate with the football. You know, he would fit a lot of the things that that Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick have done with Tom Brady in the past. They've also got this entire other package that, you know, they can work with Cam Newton, where I don't think you want Mac Jones running quarterback power a whole lot. But, you know the New England, they're going to be adapted every single week. They're going to be game plan specific. And that's going to be one of the great quarterback competitions. And we got a handful of quarterback competitions going into the training camp here where you legit don't know who it's going to be. And that's not even counting the likes of Chicago, where they've already said Andy Dalton's our guy, even though we all know and we remember back to when they signed Mike Glennon and said Mike Glennon's our guy, then drafted Mitch Trubisky and he was starting by week four. I could see a same scenario playing out with Justin Fields, although I also would say Andy Dalton has a much stronger track record and a better chance of success in Chicago than Glennon ever did.
Tom, I was going to mention something to you as well. I got from Jim Haslett, you know, as a coach at Tennessee and the Titans, and a good guy. He played for me at Buffalo and also I did a coaching job in the World League. But anyway, Jim was telling me about tight end. I don't know if you've heard about him. You know, like this Anthony Berger is very talented pass receiver. I didn't. Jim doesn't get too high on too many players, but I had a chance to watch some tape on him the other day, and my goodness, he's got receiver skills. You can't believe. I think when they put Julio Jones and Brown out there with Berger, And now it's going to be very, very difficult to put 8 and 9 people in the box against the big guy, which teams like to do. And you're just not going to be able to do it with that much passing skill on the field at one time.
Well, that's definitely the idea, you know, more big bodies out there and, you know, the ability to create mismatch threats. I mean, I was at that playoff game against Baltimore where, you know, the Ravens did a really good job of being physical up front. They never let Derrick Henry get that head of steam, which, you know, Derrick Henry's a really, as you know, Coach, a physical running back. He can wear you out. One thing he's not going to do is create his own holes in the backfield. I mean, he's got to get that initial crease and you know, build up a little steam, or he's got to overpower somebody. And they just kind of held their blocks and stayed physical up front. Henry never got going. That put a lot more pressure onto the passing game. And, you know, even though they had, of course, you know, Corey Davis, who got paid by the Jets, you know, another good receiver, they didn't have a Julio. Firkser is definitely a guy I know they've been high on. And, again, they promoted Todd Downing from tight ends coach, so he knows how good Firkser can be. They've done a really good job churning out good tight ends, going back to when Arthur Smith was there as the tight ends coach and then the offensive coordinator. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if all those guys have an opportunity to be highly productive this year. I'll just be fascinated to see, again, with a guy like Julio, who doesn't really, you know, have a reputation for blocking, doesn't really want to be a blocker, how do they kind of use him? You know, will he get in there and dig out a safety every now and then? Are there other ways that they can kind of cover that up and accentuate what he does best? That's all going to be on Downing's plate, and you know, that'll be certainly one of the storylines to watch in camp and beyond.
Yeah, well, you're right. You know, interestingly, there are two teams in that division, two weaker teams, and then two teams that could be dark horses in the whole championship race, and that's the Colts. And I just believe that Frank Reich, of course, I'm a little prejudiced there. I drafted Frank at Buffalo. But I think Frank is going to do one heck of a job with Wentz. And, I mean, they've got as good an offensive line as anybody in football. They're not bad defensively. They're at least representative with their passing talent on the field. And they certainly have a rapport and know how to work with Wentz. I think they made a big boo-boo in Philadelphia with him. But anyway, how do you feel about the Colts?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, Coach, is how can they get Carson Wentz back on track? And it's not just Frank Reich who knows him there. Press Taylor is now there. Mike Groh, those were three of his guys in Philadelphia. So, you know, and Reich was the one who always kind of had the reputation that he connected with Carson on a personal level as well as a professional level. And, you know, obviously the Colts are willing to take the bet. I mean, I don't think you would have found a whole lot of people within the NFL going into last season who didn't put Carson Wentz in the top half of starting quarterbacks within the league, you know, to get him for what they got him for. You know, we'll find out whether or not there's, you know, between the mental and the physical toll of how it ended in Philadelphia. We'll see if he can get back to playing at that high level. But they've, you know, they've built a really good offensive line. They've invested a lot in the ground game. It's not going to be completely on Carson Wentz's shoulders. And you would think if there's any place he can have success going forward, it's Indy.
I would agree with that totally. I think they're a real dark horse in the deal. Let me ask you another question that was posed to me to ask you, and that's about Tampa. Tampa Bay. Give me your thoughts on the Bucs and what this year looks like for them.
Well, they hope it looks a lot like last year. You know, they brought back every single player. I can't think of another example in recent NFL history where every significant contributor and starter from a Super Bowl winning team came back the following year. You know, how that kind of evolves with Antonio Brown, it seems being eligible for the entire season this year, which last year, you know, if you prorate out his statistics over those last 8 games, he would have been the leading receiver on the Buccaneers team and played his best football in the playoffs. Does he take on a larger role? Where does that leave Chris Godwin, who we'll see whether or not they can get a deal done with him before the deadline tomorrow? They've obviously got Mike Evans, another year with those running backs returning, including Leonard Fournette, and also another year where Tom Brady actually has had – more time to kind of not just learn what the Bucs want to do, but also for them to learn what Tom Brady wants to do. You know, last year, going into the bye, which I want to say was around mid-November for him, the Bucs were not playing well. That offense was not playing well. And coaches who watched him and know Brady told me at the time, you know, why, I don't know why they're trying to do all this vertical passing, and, you know, it looked like a Bruce Arians offense. Well, all of a sudden they come back from the bye, and where, you know, Bruce and Tom played golf during it and all that, they suddenly start running a lot more stuff that's the short passing game, ball control type of an offense that Brady's had success with in the past. You know, what direction do they kind of evolve to? I would imagine they doubled down on doing the stuff that made them successful at the end of last season. So, you know, if anything, the Bucs to me seem like a scarier team, even though you always have that concern in the back of your head that when you basically just bring everybody back, that there are some of those guys who might, you know, decline just a little bit, and, you know, you may have some tough decisions as things move forward.
Well, I think you summed them up perfectly. I couldn't agree with you more. I really feel like this football team, given exactly the circumstances that you talked about last year, all the problems they had trying to get it with the pandemic and so on, and then all the players coming back, I really think this is a very good football team. And couldn't agree with you more, Tom, about the change at the bye week. I've talked about that on this show. It was very evident that their offense changed during that bye week. They came back. I don't think they lost a game. I think they won every ball game after the bye week. So certainly they should look at doing the same thing again. Who would you put in the race right now? Not a medical question, certainly, but who would you put in their top four or five teams?
Well, within the NFC, I think that a lot of it comes down to how things play out in Green Bay with the Aaron Rodgers situation. And, you know, there's still a lot of different levers that Rodgers can pull as we move forward here. So if he is back one way or another with Green Bay, even if it's for only a season, you have to look at them as a contender in that side. You know, I tend to believe, based on everything I know, that the Cowboys are going to be much improved. We know what their offense did at the start of last season. That defense is probably playing more to their strengths, and they've had more time on task. And Dan Quinn coming in there, injecting that energy that he brings. I think that Dallas could be one of those sleeper types of teams. You know, pick anybody from the NFC West, it's pretty apparent that they are all in. You can never count out Seattle from year to year. The Rams go all in with Matthew Stafford. San Francisco thinks that they should be a title contender. And the Cardinals go all in, bringing in the likes of J.J. Watt and A.J. Green and Rodney Hudson. You know, you don't bring in a bunch of 30-something-year-old former Pro Bowlers if you don't think that you're winning right now. I think that all those teams are potentially factors on the NFC side. The AFC, in my mind, runs through Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs until further notice. You know, we've never seen anybody do what Mahomes has done from both a team and individual perspective at this point in his career. And I know there's a lot of quarterbacks who have gotten off the hot starts. Statistically, he compares similarly to Aaron Rodgers early on, and Rodgers won a Super Bowl in his third season as the starter, but Rodgers also sat for 3 years before he got to start. You know, the fact that Patrick Mahomes is under contract for another, whatever it is, 10 or 11 years, and is still only 25, 26 years old, I mean, I don't know how you don't look at them as being the favorite, even though, you know, obviously there's some other teams that think they're going to take a good run at them here.
Yeah, I do think, though, that maybe there's a good chance, that Mahomes has been possibly overrated a little. You know, look, here he goes to a football team that is loaded. There's no doubt about the speed and the athletic ability that they have on offense. Got one of the very best coaches in the game at game planning, strategizing. I just think it's a gift that he's with Andy Reid. And things have fallen into place for him. Now, he's a good quarterback and a good kid, and I don't take anything away from him there, but my goodness, you can't compare him with the quarterbacks that have over a much longer period of time have exhibited a heck of a lot more. So anyway, that's my commentary on him. And I wish him well. I think he's a fine young quarterback, and I'm sure he's going to be. He's going to have a great record. So I appreciate it very much, Tom, and thank you so much. We'll talk to you again. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thank you.